This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, October 17th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Council Curbs Video Gambling in Decatur. Decatur. After months of discussion, the Decatur City Council moved Tuesday to limit the number of video gambling parlors in the city. The council voted 5-2 for changes that govern Class P liquor licenses, which are issued to establishments with the primary purpose of providing video gambling machines. The measure effectively caps the number of parlors at 30. The number of existing establishments and those with pending license applications. Over time, the city will reduce the number of parlors to 20 through attrition. Additionally, new parlors must be located 1,500 feet from other parlors. I think, in general, the public wants to see some changes, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said after the meeting. While we're not making sweeping changes to close anybody down, we are making some changes, so we're answering the general call of the public. Council members Chris Funk and Bill Favor voted against the ordinance change for very different reasons. Funk said the city officials already made the choice to allow gambling and subsequently to allow parlors, and shouldn't change the rules now. To now try to shove stuff back into Pandora's box, so to speak, and say now we don't want quite so many, and we don't like the way it turned out, I think is bad policy, Funk said. Faber, on the other hand, said he thought the council should involve the community and find a more comprehensive solution to the spread of gambling in Decatur. We have the power to solve the problem, Faber said of the council. What we don't have is the political will to solve this problem. In other business, city staff walked council members through the process that contractors follow to bid on public works projects. The presentation included a review of minority participation goals that the council created in March 2015. Council members raised questions about the process last month during discussions about street repair work. Several contractors were deemed non-responsive by city staff because they failed to meet the requirements under the minority ordinance. The goals require that contractors make a good faith effort to ensure minority workers perform at least 18% of the total hours worked on city projects. When the job includes a subcontractor, the goal is for 10% of the total dollar amount to be performed by minority business enterprises, which are owned and operated by minorities. Public Works Director Rick Marley described a pre-bid meeting that is held with potential contractors to outline requirements of the ordinance, including what constitutes a good faith effort. For instance, bidders should make contact with at least 3 minority business enterprises for each subcontracting opportunity. City Manager Tim Gleason said it has become clear to him over the past year and a half that the minority participation goals are very important, as are local contractors and unions. None of these compete. The ultimate goal is that all 3 come together and deliver the best opportunities that we can to the community, Gleason said. several people spoke in favor of the minority participation goals before the council meeting, including multiple representatives from the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. The City Council cannot afford to water down this ordinance, said its president, Wol Abel. Your credibility could be at stake. Moore Wolf said the council members asked the council members after the study session if they wanted to make changes, and no one offered any. She said after the meeting that there are no plans to change the Minority Business Enterprise Ordinance. I think we're seeing some real progress, Moore Wolf said of the ordinance. I think now that there is a much clearer understanding from everybody, I think it'll make it a lot easier for everybody in the future. The next article is entitled, Dell's Popcorn Reopening Serves Up Delight. Decatur. Popcorn lovers rejoice. And caramel apple lovers. And historic Decatur lovers. And downtown workers. The reopening of Dell's Popcorn Shop, 142 North Merchant, inspired celebratory attitudes for all kinds of reasons Tuesday. We have been waiting for forever for it to reopen. It's not the same at the mall. It's not the same nostalgia, said customer Missy Martin, referring to the Hickory Point Mall location that opened last year. I grew up coming down here with my mom, said Martin, who brought her 3-year-old daughter and 2 young babysitting charges. You can drive through downtown and smell the popcorn, and it just makes your mouth water. Tuesday was the store's first full day open since a devastating fire in April 2015. It opened for 3 hours on Labor Day to great response. Said manager Maggie Howley. When you're trying to rebuild a building as old as this, it takes time, she said. You run into things you weren't expecting, and it's just a long process. The downtown location is selling a caramel apples and popcorn dish, including warm caramel, cheese, and regular flavors. Owner Kemper Wilcutt II said he hopes to bring the full rotation back into play in the next few weeks, after some remaining construction wraps up. Everybody's excited, but everybody is ready for the cases to be overflowing with candy and all that stuff too, he said. Visitors will notice that the side of the shop that previously displayed novelty candies and baskets has been closed off, slated to become a packaging room during holidays. Howley said the same treats will be available in the shop, which gained some space in the renovation. History remains on display, with the large copper popcorn kettles once again mounted to the wall. Almost all of the antique ceiling lamps were able to be salvaged, and new brick at the entrance was taken from Merchant Street during the city's downtown streetscape renovations, Howley said. The excitement extended to beyond customers. Giggles, employees chipped in to buy Wilcutt a cigar in honor of the rebirth of his business. Dell's is an iconic part of Merchant Street, said Gary Donahue, an artist at Giggles. People will drive around a long time looking for a parking spot so they can buy popcorn, and then they'll walk down to the other businesses. I just love seeing the neon light shine again, she said. Even across town, other businesses were excited to see the return of one of their own. The Secret Garden delivered a red floral arrangement to Dell's on Tuesday with a card, "Bring on caramel apple season." The next article is entitled United Cerebral Palsies, an Advocate for Decatur Development Disabled. Decatur. Every January, 2,300 people load into buses and travel on a course of Decatur bars, playing a miniature golf hole at each and enjoying plenty of food and drinks along the way. The Miller Lite UCP Barstool Open is the largest in the country, with 52 bars making up 7 courses manned by 150 volunteers. It raised more than $94,000 in 2016, all of it going to United Cerebral Palsy's Decatur office. The Barstool Open succeeds because it's a fun way to help when the activity is day drinking and mini golf. The cause isn't necessarily top of mind. UCP Decatur Chief Marketing Officer Jenny Dawson said she knows the average participant doesn't know exactly what their money is going to when they pay. People know we're some sort of social service agency, but that's about it, Dawson said. And some people think it's going to other places besides Decatur, but it's not. That money is helping people just right here in Decatur. And if we don't have it, we'd be in trouble. It's what keeps us here. UCP Decatur serves more than 100 individuals with developmental disabilities, not just cerebral palsy, in the Decatur area. The bulk of the Barstool Open proceeds go to pay for UCP's after-school program, which it began last year. It's a place they can go until mom and dad are done with work, Dawson said. It's a supplement to whatever they've been working on in school, so they can work on their spelling words and homework. And there's also art and music therapy and a healthy snack. We're big into teaching individuals how to take care of themselves, and that includes eating healthy and being active. Laura Scoville, a UCP case manager and a qualified intellectual disabilities professional, said that after-school program is also a chance for kids in the group to have interaction with each other. We help with homework and whatever else they need help with, but a big part of it is letting them socialize with peers in a safe place, Scoville said. This fall, UCP Decatur brought back its program for high school-aged kids with developmental disabilities, called Teen Abilities. It helps participants with the transition from high school to adulthood. We assess their abilities and interests and try to help them decide what's next, Dawson said. We ask them if they're interested in joining workforce, the workforce, are interested in higher education. Then help them figure out what the next step is. We also work on social skills and what styles of learning work best for them. UCP also has summer and winter camps for kids. Most of UCP's services are for under 21 individuals, but it does offer free medical support, service and transportation, and a healthy living program every weekday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Its medical transportation system goes as far as Peoria, St. Louis, and Chicago to take individuals to their appointments. If the individual chooses, their case manager can serve as an advocate during doctor's visits. I don't think people always realize how important that is for our clients, Dawson said. If you're in a motorized wheelchair, you can't get into a regular vehicle. You have to have a wheelchair-accessible van, and you might have appointments in places other than Decatur that aren't easy to get to and can cause a big financial strain. Then, if the patient asks us to, the case managers can act as a liaison between the doctor and the patient. We work with them regularly and understand how they communicate. A physician seeing them twice a year might not be able to do that. It helps the physician understand them and helps them understand the physician. Scoville said UCP case managers take time to know the patients personally in order to better advocate. We get close to them. We get attached to the point where we want to take them home, Scoville said, laughing. We have to get close to them to learn how they communicate. It's a lot of responsibility because the medical part isn't always easy to understand. But knowing them as well as I do allows me to help foster the communication. But even with such a successful fundraiser and another coming up, Puttin' for Kids, a children's outing at Overlook Adventure Mini Golf Course on Saturday, September 24th, UCP is struggling financially. UCP Land of Lincoln recently laid off 30 staff members from its four offices in Decatur, Bloomington, Springfield, and Champaign. It was really hard for a while that we're still feeling the effects of it, Dawson said. We're all basically doing two jobs now. UCP Decatur also has had to cut its therapeutic horseback riding program. It's a great program, but it's costly, Dawson said. We hope in the next couple of years we'll be able to bring it back. The money UCP Decatur receives comes from a Title X donated funds initiative program plan. UCP receives a grant funded by both state and federal money matching the funds it raises. That's why I saw when the Miller Lite UCP Barstool Open keeps us here, I meant it. It literally keeps us going, Dawson said. The next article is entitled, Decatur Man Pleads Guilty to Charges in Two 2011 Shootings. Decatur. Shedevias Cook, who has been in custody on first-degree murder charges since he was 15 years old, was sentenced to 22 years in prison after pleading guilty to attempted first-degree murder and dismembering a human body in connection with two shooting incidents in August 2011. Cook, who was scheduled for a trial on Tuesday before he decided to plead guilty, stood before Associate Judge James Coryell dressed in a jail jumpsuit early Friday. Coryell read the charges to Cook, who was accompanied by his attorney, Charles Lucas. You committed the act of attempted first-degree murder in that with the intent to kill Joshua Anderson, you personally discharged a shotgun that caused great bodily harm to Joshua Anderson. He said, you committed the offense of dismembering a human body when you discharged a firearm in close proximity of the face and head of Billy Rutherford. In the attempted murder case, Anderson, then 31, was on his motorcycle and stopped at a red light at Grand Avenue and Martin Luther King Drive, Jr. before midnight, August 24, 2011. Cook fired a shotgun blast at Anderson while standing in front of his house on the north side of Grand. He was wounded in his right leg. Cook later told police he mistakenly shot Anderson because he believed he was Billy Rutherford, 24, who had threatened Cook's life. Rutherford owned a motorcycle that was almost identical in appearance. Cook was arrested after Rutherford was shot to death 5 days later. The arrest was a result of information obtained by police that Cook had been telling people he mistakenly shot the wrong man on a motorcycle. During a police interview, Cook said he saw Rutherford walk toward an alley behind North Woodford Street on the night of August 29th, then heard multiple gunshots. He admitted that after seeing Rutherford lying in the alley, he fired a shotgun at his body. A double-barreled shotgun was found at Cook's residence that contained one spent casing and one round of live ammunition. On Friday, First Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Cronk said in court that if the case had gone to trial, she would have presented evidence from a forensic pathologist that showed the murder weapon was a 9mm handgun, and that Rutherford also suffered injuries to his face and head from a shotgun. Although Cook was originally charged with first-degree murder, the evidence later showed Rutherford was dead when Cook shot him. Cronch said one reason Cook was offered the plea deal was that he cooperated with authorities to the extent that they were able to obtain convictions against his co-defendants, D'Amico Hill and Felton Estes. Hill, now 38, was convicted by a jury in January of a Class X felony, armed habitual criminal, and sentenced to 25 years in prison. Estes, now 32, pleaded guilty to one count of obstructing justice in March and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Cook was given some consideration for his confession, Cronch said. Without his statement, Felton Estes and D'Amico Hill wouldn't have been arrested. In addition to Hill's involvement in the murder of Rutherford, Hill also admitted that he was the owner of a firearm that was identified as a murder weapon in the 2011 slaying of 17-year-old Caleb Whitty. The victim was walking his sister home from the carnival that precedes Decatur celebration. On August 4, 2011, when he was gunned down during an attempted robbery, that case remains unsolved. Cook, who will receive credit for 1,235 days in custody, will serve 12 years for the charge of dismembering a human body at up to 85% of the term. The 10-year term for attempted first-degree murder will be served at 5%. The sentences are consecutive. Cook will be eligible for parole in 2026. The next article is entitled, St. Mary's Catholic Charities Team Up to Provide Dental Care Program. Decatur. HSH St. Mary's Hospital doesn't have a dentist, but when it conducted its last community needs assessment, it found affordable dental care for adults to be an area of need in Macon County. The result is a new program about to be launched by HSMS in conjunction with Decatur Catholic Charities, called the Dental Voucher Program. Adults who qualify will receive financial help in paying for emergency dental and oral surgery services. Kim Luz, HS Central Illinois Division Director of Community Outreach, said HSHS St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital ran a similar program with success, and St. Mary's program is based off that one. St. Mary's partnered with the Macon County Dental Task Force, which is part of the Macon County Health Department, then reached out to area dentists. Seven signed up and will begin accepting the voucher when the program launches September 19th. Not a lot of private practices accept Medicaid, and the places that do have incredibly long waiting lists, Luz said. But it's a working class issue, too. A lot of people can get dental insurance as an add-on, but at a greater cost, and many simply can't afford it. The result is that many low-income people and those in working population have seen their dental benefits disappear. There's a great need. Any Macon County resident 18 years and older who is underinsured or uninsured for dental care with an emergency need for tooth extraction is eligible. Coverage is provided for two dental exams with X-ray, one extraction, and up to three fillings per year. A patient can be referred to from a physician, dentist, social service agency, but can also check with their eligibility by meeting with Catholic Charities. Call 217-428-3458 to find out more about the program or set up an appointment. We've already been receiving phone calls about it, Lutz said. We've already had 15 people call up about setting up appointments. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, September 7th edition. This has been Captain Rick reporting. I'll be back with part two right after the break.